in-office studios of his eye care practices in Nashville, Tennessee. It's As I See It with Dr. Jeff Kegaris, your source for eye care education and receiving the type of patient relationship you deserve. It is time for a patient revolution. And now, your host, Dr. Jeff Kegaris.
Today, we continue to focus on COVID-19 and the experience and opinions of provider doctors. I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Ming Wang from the Wang Foundation for Sight Restoration here in Nashville, Tennessee. Dr. Wang is a Harvard and MIT graduate and one of the few cataract and LASIK eye surgeons in the world today who holds a doctorate degree in laser physics. Dr. Wang founded the Wang Foundation for Sight Restoration, a nonprofit organization which to date has helped patients from over 40 states in the United States and 55 countries. Dr. Wang is well known for many things. He's an excellent ophthalmic surgeon, a champion ballroom dancer, the founder of the Nashville chapter of the Chinese Chamber of Commerce, and author of many clinical textbooks, as well as his own personal autobiography. I also know him as Ming, and he's a really good guy. Dr. Wang has recently suggested steps to pursue when we do start reopening business as usual. Steps that would help us avoid a second wave of corona infection. I wanted to hear more from him and talk to him about his views and dig a little deeper into his suggestions.
If you don't mind, Dr. Wang, say your first and last name and spell it for me.
Ming Wang, M-I-N-G-W-A-N-G.
Hey, I really appreciate you being willing to do this, and I was I'm very, very interested in just us having more conversational discussion. But I gave you kind of a script of what I want to do for the audience to get you into this. Mm-hmm.
No problem.
If that's okay with you, I have already recorded the introduction, and I'm going to start here in just a second. And I'm just going to start with Dr. Wang. Thank you for joining us today. Okay.
Okay, sounds good.
Good with that. Anything else you want to bring up before you and I start chit-chatting a little bit?
I would say probably the most what I've been, because I've been doing these webinars, today is the third, so this is a recording, but I do like three or four a day all over the Tennessee and the United States now. I've done about probably nearly 15, 20, and I have another 15-20 on the schedule. So one of the most important questions that people kept on wanting to ask to know is what's going to happen in May? Mm-hmm. You know, what should be prepared? You know, we got burned once so bad as a nation, right? In early March, not being prepared.
Right.
We, as a nation, we cannot afford to get burned again when the country reopened, when the floodgates reopened, 5 million silent carriers will be released from their home confinement open to the open society. So what are the things that people, because whatever you want to implement in May, you have to be prepared for them now in April. So that's what people want to know.
Yep.
So that has been the most frequent asked question to me. And I think I sent you an article about the seven measures. Didn't come from me. Came from this aggregation of this country's pearls that I extract.
Okay.
Working.
Okay.
So we can talk about that if you want, because that's something that seems to be everybody. But we'll come to a tail end, second half of this country now. So most people staying home. So people, we can talk about some of the basics of virus and stuff like that. I'll be happy to address many basic questions. Why this virus is infectious? You know, what's the effect on to the eye? Things like that. But most practically important for people to know, day-to-day basis, how do you open? What do you do? The different things as we reopen, you know, things like that.
Well, good. Well, as we just talk, those things will come up. I may follow some of this outline. I may stray a little bit. We're going to probably condense it to about 20 minutes, so we'll try to hit the high points. But I also want, when we play this for the audience, I want to make sure that, you know, you get some good marketing pub out of it too. Okay.
Thank you.
So I've already done the beginning part. So if you will, in just a second, I'm going to count to about 5 seconds of silence, and then I'm going to just start talking, and we're just going to converse back and forth. Okay.
Yes.
Dr. Wang, Ming, thank you for joining us today.
Yes. You're welcome. My pleasure.
Well, you are a healthcare provider, and one of the things that we always want to do is to recognize that you're on the front lines in this COVID-19 outbreak, so we thank you very much for your service to the community and the community of patients that you care for.
Thank you.
We're in a very, we're in a very interesting transitional time now, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you the most is that you've been a big proponent of preparation now for what may come in the future. I mean, we have faced stay at home and a virtual shutdown of our economy. Our leaders are anxious. Our people are anxious. Many of your and my patients are anxious. And some, if not most, are anxious to get back to normal. When is normal going to happen? Yet you are stressing that this is a particularly crucial time, possibly a particularly vulnerable time for us here in late April. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yes. You know, what I believe, history is the best predictor for future. And if other people are doing the same thing that we'll be doing 2 months from now for us, they're doing now, the 2 months ahead of us, will be very useful. And if I look at in terms of why America has become the most infected nations on this planet with the most number of deaths, it has a lot to do with the fact that we got burned the first time, very bad, in late February, early March. Even though President Trump closed the flight from China, which was the right thing to do. But at the same time, when the virus did finally hit America, late February, early March, many government agencies, we are basically, unfortunately, not well prepared. For example, CDC did not have the testing kits available for many weeks, resulting in our not having the ability to detect the early group of patients who got infected in America. So now there's a second critical time has come now, which is when our country reopened. In 1918, Spanish flu, 60 million people died, one in every four people on this planet. A majority died in the second and third outbreak.
That brings up, if you can help me with that, that brings up a good point. When does that second outbreak typically occur, or does it vary based upon the particular virulence of the virus?
Typically, it's about average about 2 to 3 months.
Okay.
Yeah, anywhere between 2 to 3 months. The reason for that is very interesting epidemiological question is because when it usually takes a few weeks for people to react, and then they usually end up social distancing, and then it's drastically cut down the transmission rate. And then usually, historically has been this way. I mean, we have the other virus affecting other countries in the last century more than us. Typically, the pattern is about like 2 months or so, a month and a half, the things went become normal. And if you don't watch out very critically at that moment when you reopen, the second wave will come. And the reason the second wave in the Spanish flu and others usually it was worse in terms of number of deaths because and all that, was because the first wave, you start with small number of individuals who are infected, and usually society reacted in a few weeks, and you know, social distancing shut off the transmission. But when you open back up, usually, as proven in this case, COVID-19, there are a lot more people who are infected the first time around, but they are not symptomatic. They are the silent carriers. In fact, we have just had this amazing experiment just concluded. Because anytime we talk about silent carriers, people always ask, we only test less than 1% of the U.S. population. How do we know the number of silent carriers out there, right? So that's a very fair question. The answer came from an amazing answer, became just available yesterday, you know, April 16th, 2020. Because the testing has been concluded, and the examination concluded for one specific group of people enclosed in one place and with uniform populational characteristics, age and everything, which is, are the sailors on Theodore Roosevelt aircraft carrier.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
5,000 sailors all being tested. So that's a miniature country. Okay?
Right, right.
We don't have all the other confounding factors. And the 600 test positive, and the vast majority have never shown any symptoms. So here's the problem. That is a microcosm, and that, from scientific, is a controlled experiment that actually we know, at least gets an idea, you know, that this is actually a question being answered right now. So 600,000 Americans are test positive right now.
Yep.
Nearly all of them have symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's how you can get be allowed to be tested. If you have no symptoms, then don't allow you to get tested, because we don't have that much testing ability. So by definition, 600,000 all have symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
But if indeed the silent carriers are 5 to 10 times, that means up until 5 million Americans are currently infected.
Yeah, if I'm not a math major, but if I do my math right, that 600 out of 5,000 seems to me to be about 12%. If you take 12% of 350 million Americans, that is a unbelievably huge number, isn't it, that are asymptomatic carriers.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
When they are asymptomatic carriers, do we know of those, Dr. Wang, how many can transmit the disease as opposed to who build up antibodies and is now at a point where they're not infective? Or is that a yet to be determined number?
We have actually pretty good idea. COVID-19, even this early on in this disease, that vast majority, the bell-shaped curve, of course, majority in the middle, typical course is first week, no symptom, second week, symptom, fever, cough, malaise, taste change. Then 98% of us are healed after second week. And the 2% go on third week, continue sick, admission hospital, many of them get a ventilator, and 80% are on the ventilator die. 80% on the ventilator die at the fourth week. So that's a typical disease course. So for the 98% are healed after second week, how long they're still shedding virus? Studies have shown on average 3 to 4 weeks. So that's entire 6 weeks that if the average typical asymptomatic carriers, they are infectious. 6 weeks.
So that's even, just to clarify, that's a 3 to 4 weeks after their three-week kind of time period of being within the active virus, correct?
Right.
Exactly. And
they continue shedding virus.
Yeah.
They continue shedding until 3 or 4 weeks after they have healed.
Wow, that's a scary proposition. Correct? In fact, I think the governor has announced that in Williamson County and other parts of the state, certainly here in Middle Tennessee, we're going to be testing more people. And what I hear you saying is, and they're going to be testing centers. You can go in, get tested. So I have a couple of questions on that. Number one, what I hear you saying is, okay, so if you go in, you get tested, and you're negative, that doesn't mean, though, that you could still be a carrier, number one. Is that right?
Well, there are two kinds of testing, right? The testing of actual virus and testing of your antibodies. The nose swab test is testing the presence of antibodies. And the fingerprint latest testing and some blood drawn testing coming out now is testing the presence of antibodies. Testing of virus is active infection. That's 6 weeks course, as I told you,
mm-hmm.
even for majority asymptomatic carrier. That's 6 weeks active infection, okay? Presence of virus. That person will have the antibodies for the entire year. So antibody testing will be showing positive, but will be entire year. Of course, after 6 weeks, you no longer have active disease, but you're immune to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, the second wave, historically, in many infectious cycles, has been worse. It's because you're starting with a larger base. Initially, think about first wave, early March, we may send, you know, Seattle, Washington, 10, 20, 30 infected patients, right? So they're very small base. The moment we reopen, open the floodgate, early May, we are releasing potentially 5 million silent carriers infectious to the from their home confinement right now. Open, back out into open society. So that's why, because when you start with a larger number, base number, that's why any transmission can cause even more deaths the second time around. And that's the reason for that.
I'm talking to Dr. Ming Wang. Dr. Wang, as you may be aware, is one of the few cataract and LASIK eye surgeons in the world today who holds a doctorate degree in laser physics. He founded the Wang Foundation for Sight Restoration. He practices here in Nashville, Tennessee. He is a tremendous ophthalmic surgeon. And this is a really scary thing because so many people get this sense of bravado that, hey, I feel great. I must have already had it and recovered, and I'm in good shape. I can't infect anybody. Let's get this economy going. Let's get out in the world. I'm going to do everything. And yet that asymptomatic nature makes it a very, very difficult, a very difficult thing to control, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. Not only that, that a asymptomatic person, let's say this person's, you know, healthy, no problem, say 30 years old, when he or she may just be able to survive the whole disease without even knowing it. And the Theodore Roosevelt experiment showed majority don't know it. Went to whole body. But the problem is this young person, socially more active than an older person, generally speaking.
Wait a minute. You're not talking about me, are you? You're talking about other people besides me, right? Okay.
You and I are still young.
Okay, good.
We're still working.
Age is a relative thing, right?
That's right.
Keep going.
And the point is that this person may not be sick or symptomatic because this person, Johnny, happened to have strong, you know, healthy body and no problem, right? That's why he didn't even know anything, right? My friend Rand Paul, the senator, that when he got test positive, he and I actually exchanged email and said, do you have any symptoms? He said, no, I have no symptoms. Mm-hmm. I said, good. So watch out, another week and a half. And he's coming out good. Now, the point is, this person, Johnny, 30 years old, carried the virus, as I said, 6 weeks. We'll be in contact during that 6 weeks with, I don't know, thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
And lots
mm-hmm.
of them are older.
Right.
And 80% of deaths are over age 55 mm-hmm. so far. COVID-19. So all the elderly, medically sick, diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease patients who unfortunately in contact with Johnny, of course not Johnny's fault, he didn't even know he's positive.
Right.
They will die.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah. So let's get right into this then. This is a potentially devastating type of thing. We have tests now. Nasal swab to detect active virus. I understand that the false negative rate on that, though, is higher than we would like. You have to get a good sample. And I know that in the ER, typically they're going to treat people symptomatically, whether they test positive or not. They're going to quarantine for 14 days based upon clinical symptoms. How close are we to having a reliable antibody test that says you have been exposed and you have built up antibodies to it?
Yeah. There's good news and bad news to the question. Excellent question. Number one, the technology actually, as we speak right now, are pretty good. I'm talking about 90%+ accurate, sensitive in terms of that. There's false negative, of course, and there was a swab that has, you know, some false negative. But that combined together when you know, have all these tests, generally, that's not the bottleneck. The bottleneck right now, we only have less than 1% of U.S. population being tested so far. We are the least tested nation on this planet. No country, in terms of Western and Asian countries, has test rate less than us, which is less than 1%. Okay? So we have a long way to go. Now, the bottleneck is not the scientific accuracy, which are already pretty good, I said. The bottleneck is the sheer reagent and testing ability. That's the bottleneck. So given that limit, given the fact we cannot afford to keep the country closed beyond May, at least for some states, right? So that's why I suggest these seven specific measures. These mm-hmm. are measures I learned from my colleagues. You know, as you probably know that I'm part of the hospital group with 600 some locations, 400 mm-hmm. in China, 85 in Europe. So I know, you know, first line ophthalmologists and the doctors in Italy, Spain, China, South Korea, Japan, Hong Kong, so I have firsthand knowledge of what's working in preventing second wave, because they already opened.
Right. And in fact, kind of an interesting point, and for all I know, you may have known this gentleman, but I believe it was an ophthalmologist in China that was one that was alerting the authorities to a high number of these particular cases, right? And unfortunately, met his demise from the disease also. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and he was a whistleblower. He died because he continued to take care of the patient. And after, I mean, it was remarkable. He's a hero.
Yes.
His wife works for our eye hospital. So our eye hospital, in memory of him, I actually decided they have two kids. One is in her stomach, not born yet. One's four or five years old.
Wow.
So our hospital decided we're going to take care of these two kids basically until they're 18, their expenses.
That is
in
tremendous.
In memory of Dr. Lee.
Because you're right. There is no telling how many lives he saved with his selfless. So let's get into the first one. You said reopening should be gradual, right? Tell me about that.
Gradual open, and that means high priority. You know, like your clinic, my clinic, some of the medical facilities, some of the high priority, more necessity type of thing. We should be opening. People need to live because we have to open the economy gradually. And in those facilities, everybody entering your clinic, my clinic, has to have temperature checked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's number one. Number two, for these early to open businesses, such as medical clinic, I advocate test everyone. Now, there's not that many people. You know, we have in our clinic, 28?
Mm-hmm.
For your clinic, you know, probably a little bit bigger in number.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you can buy these reagents. I'm looking into that. I'll be happy to share with you. Probably cost, you know, $30, $50 a shot or something. So I want to buy these for all my staff and test all of them. Okay? And I'm going to identify one or two silent carriers, possibly. Depends on, you know, the chance. And that person needs to stay home at least for that, you know, 2 weeks at least, and we'll watch out everything. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what that would do, though, is that we as important essential business, but at the same time, large contact with population, right? Or the patient walking, that I want to give my patients the peace of mind. They say, okay, they come to, you know, your Cool Spring Eye Clinic, you know, Dr. Mm-hmm. Jeff Kagler's practice, Dr. Wang's, that, you know, that really we have taken an extra step in testing ourselves, our staff. So they are entering the environment where none of the care. Because think about who are the high-risk professionals. It's us. It's the policeman. It's the nurse. It's the doctors. It's the paramedics. And the restaurant servers. It's the supermarket attendees. But these people have multiple day-to-day hundred, you know, large number. So they are potentially the highest transmitter, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Most dangerous transmitter as such. So my second proposal is testing people in those early to open businesses. Number three.
Okay, let me before we go to number three, Ming, let me talk about number two again. When you're testing, do you advocate testing these people for asymptomatic carriers? I have active virus, but I don't have symptoms. Or are you advocating that we test them for antibody development, or is it both? Do we end up with you've been exposed, but you recovered, you didn't even know it. You are asymptomatic, you have it, you need to go home. And then this third category of people that haven't been exposed, don't have it, they're still at risk. I mean, is that what you're kind of saying?
Yeah, excellent question. You got a very logical, scientific mind of the characteristics, and you already basically see the picture of this. It's a 2x2 table, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we've got two kinds of testing. The virus testing is called diagnostic test and antibody testing, okay? These are two different, distinct different tests, tell different things. So you got a combination of four, right? 2x2.
Yep.
You're going to have some population who is virus positive, antibody negative. Some is the other way. Some are both negative, both positive, okay? So you have to treat each of these four possibilities differently. Somebody who is testing positive for virus, that means they have active virus, but immune system has not kicked in yet. Of course, you got to send them home. You know, they cannot be, you know, because they're going to have symptoms very soon, likely, not necessarily, but also, you know, they're going to have shedding virus for some weeks after that. So that's that. Mm-hmm. If someone who is negative, negative, that's a clean person, right? Now, today, negative, negative, doesn't mean this person will be negative, negative tomorrow either.
Right.
Because he or she could be contact tonight because this person has no antibodies and no viruses. So white clean person, which most of us will be after this first wave, you know, it's going to be still vulnerable. But at least we know that person can continue work in our clinic, no problem.
Do you think that population should be retested in a month, for instance?
Great question. Nobody knows. All depends on one single bottleneck has to be the availability. Right now mm-hmm. in America, mm-hmm. if you want to, just, you know, negative, negative, you want to be a month to be tested, it's not available.
Mm-hmm.
You right now, the only way to get for people to get tested in America is you have to have symptom, you have to have a known contact with COVID-19 positive in the past week. I mean, you have to jump through hoops right now to get tested because not enough facilities. Okay, so the specific facilities will be key. But in an ideal situation, maybe you know a month later you have to retest. So negative negative can be working. So how about positive negative? Well, which I'll talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, the virus but no antibody. How about negative positive? That means no virus right now, but has the antibodies. That's my number three recommendation. These are people should come back, okay? Because mm-hmm. they have no virus, and they are test positive. That means they have the infection some weeks ago, didn't know, and basically they healed, and not only healed, they in fact no longer shedding virus. The reason you can tell they're not shedding virus because their diagnostic viral particle test negative.
Mm-hmm.
So negative plus minus plus patient, negative for virus plus for immune, it's the best patient, best mm-hmm. back to bring back. So this person is not going to get infection with 99% confidence because 99% of people have COVID-19 has not demonstrated reinfection.
I think that's an important point I want to reemphasize because that was going to be a question I was going to ask you. Does this virus mutate, and can people get a second infection that is a COVID-19 variant that even if you developed antibodies to the first round, you might still get it again? Or are you saying that's a really, really low percentage in what we know medically today?
Yeah, I will tell you, based on data, at the moment, over 2 million infected already, and the 99.9% have not demonstrated second infection. Now, there are a few cases now, huge cases in some Asian countries, second infection. And the best they can tell, it seems that these are not second infection, but the person, you know, medically sick or not very strong, actually never completely healed from the first time. So it's a viral activation. Because some viruses live in the body, 6 weeks, the bell shape curve is the standard.
So that's like the patients you and I see that have an inflammatory eye disease, a uveitis, and we mm-hmm. treat them with steroids, and they go, boy, am I feeling better, and all of a sudden they start tapering down on their medicine too soon, and it was never fully resolved. It's still lingering there, smolders, and then it comes back with a vengeance, right?
Exactly. So few cases in the world so far been demonstrated what thought was to be a second infection appears to be a just incomplete resolution for the first time. Okay. So at the moment, there's no strong evidence demonstrate second. However, a second infection on the immune or immune person. However, the immunity is not expected to be last more than a year.
Hmm.
In fact, our seasonal flu shot every fall, we get every year. You cannot get a seasonal flu shot, you know, in the past years, you know, just immune for 5 years. That doesn't work. Every year you're supposed to get it.
Right.
Because the flu shot, but by the way, our traditional flu shot in peacetime, so to speak, before COVID-19, 20% of those flu shot is against coronavirus already. It's a different strain, not COVID-19, but different type of coronavirus. So that's why we need to. So the immunity, even for this, you know, minus plus, meaning no virus, but has antibodies, so these patients are immune, only supposed to be a year only. Okay, mm-hmm, so hopefully the vaccine can develop next year.
Safe the and last, good for a while, but not forever, right?
Yes. The last combination is, let's see, we talk about plus plus.
Mm-hmm.
That means you have virus and you have immunity. That person is pretty much dealt with as the first group, plus minus, because they have virus. Once you have virus, all bets are off. You have to stay home or be treated. Okay? So to answer your question, none of the two tests, the viral test or antibody test, tell the whole story. You have to get both. if you have to generate this 4x4 story, and you once you generate that, in fact, it may be a good idea, because you cannot test one. If that's your test, just virus. Well, that can do something, because if you have virus, you know, you have to stay home. But if you just have virus, you don't know whether the person has antibody or not. So if it's a negative for virus, you don't know. Because there are also quite a bit of population, as I mentioned, asymptomatic carriers, many of them here already, they have antibodies. They don't have virus anymore. So some of these can become back to work. So get the whole picture, you have to do 2x2. So right. That's my third right. point.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Ming, hang on just a second, because we're running a little longer, but you know, this is such an interesting and such an important point that we're gonna take a very, very short break, and we're gonna come back and do the second part of this.